We'll hear argument now in number 91-6516, Edward Soldow versus Cook County, Illinois. Mr. Stainthorpe.
This case involves the issue of whether the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution protects the law-abiding against unreasonable seizure of their home and effects by state officers. If we look at the history of the enactment of the Fourth Amendment and the historical events that gave rise to its enactment over 200 years ago, if we look at the text of the amendment itself, and if we look at the decisions of this court construing the Fourth Amendment, then the answer is unequivocally yes. The Fourth Amendment does apply in situations such as my client's, and a seizure unaccompanied by a search must nevertheless satisfy the Fourth Amendment's command that it be reasonable. The Seventh Circuit decision from which this petition for certiorari is taken is therefore wrong in saying, first of all, that the law enforcement context of the case is relevant in terms of whether the Fourth Amendment applies, and also is wrong in saying that the Fourth Amendment does not protect possessory interests of persons, and also is wrong in saying that the privacy rights of my clients in this particular situation were not violated.
Suggest that the Fourth Amendment protects possessory rights in a piece of personal property just anywhere, do you?
The Fourth Amendment would protect possessory rights in the type of property which is protected by the Fourth Amendment.
Well,
yes, that would be my
contention. Let's assume the officers enter an open field and run off with a mowing machine. You think that's a Fourth Amendment violation?
I think if that is a seizure.
Well, it's an effect, isn't it? And it's a seizure.
If it is a seizure, if it is an effect, and if in fact that seizure is unreasonable, and it would apply. And this court has held that it would apply in that situation in cases such as GM leasing, where there was a seizure of cars that were on the public street, yet nevertheless that was analyzed as a possible Fourth Amendment violation. Conceptually no different than the case that you are proposing here. If you look at Jacobson, United States against Jacobson, there you had seizure of a what turned out to be cocaine, an effect, and yet that was again analyzed as a possible Fourth Amendment violation.
Well, there's no doubt that if you seize something incident to an invasion of privacy in the home or some other protected place like a car, why the Fourth Amendment does is implicated.
But the point of those places was that there was no invasion of privacy. In fact, in Jacobson, the court only got to the possible invasion of possessory rights after concluding that there was no invasion of privacy because of the involvement of, in that case, of the private parties and for various reasons.
A law enforcement officer walks up to a person on the street, grabs his briefcase out of his hand, and walks off with it, and then gets a warrant to open it.
Yes.
And he had probable cause to have it open. But do you think just seizing the briefcase on the street is a Fourth Amendment?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Even if it's never opened?
Even if it is never opened, because this court has consistently held that the Fourth Amendment does protect possessory rights as well as, in addition to, privacy rights. In many cases, those two types of rights are intertwined, as I submit they clearly were in this particular situation. But a mere violation or a sole violation of possessory rights brings the Fourth Amendment into play. If that is not so, then the whole line of cases of this court, which are known as the plain view seizure cases, make no sense.
If that is so, how do you explain that there hasn't been, that this is the first time that a case like this should have come up in a couple of hundred years? I mean, sheriffs have been seizing and repossessing goods since the beginning of the Republic. And we don't have a case in which it's been asserted there's a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Why? Well, I think that's not accurate, Justice Scalia.
Okay, why not?
Because the GM leasing case, which was a seizure for tax purposes, in that case by IRS agents, did analyze the seizure itself, not any search, but the seizure itself, as a possible Fourth Amendment violation, held that it must satisfy the command of the Fourth Amendment that it be reasonable, and held eventually that it was reasonable.
What was the date of that?
The GM leasing was
1977.
Okay, 1977.
So not 200 years, 190 or
whatnot. Judge, I don't think that's true too either. Excuse me, Justice Scalia. In fact, if you look at the history as laid out in the in my brief, in my opening brief, there is a consistent line of cases which hold that the Fourth Amendment, first of all, is applicable in a non-criminal context, and
I'm talking about sheriff seizures. These things have been going on all the time, and very often the person says, no, that property was wrongly taken, that they shouldn't have had it.
Well, most...
I assume that there's a state remedy, and I it seems to me the reason has probably been that there's a state remedy for those seizures. If they're wrong, you'll get your money back, and therefore the state hasn't taken anything without due process of law.
And for that reason, I have not brought a procedural due process claim before this court, and it is a Fourth Amendment claim that is before this court and not a procedural due process claim.
How does the Fourth Amendment apply to the states?
Through the 14th Amendment.
Which reads?
Which is
no one shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process
correct.
Of law.
Yes.
Right? So you are ultimately bringing a due process claim before this court.
In that sense, but this court has always been clear that civil rights actions... There are basically three types. That there's Zinnemann points out that there are actions based upon a violation of a substantive provision of the Bill of Rights, such as the Fourth Amendment. Actions based upon
which is what you're claiming here, isn't it? I mean, you're bringing an incorporation argument, not a procedure argument.
That is
you're claiming incorporation due process.
That is correct, Justice Souter. Yeah, but that issue has really not been raised about. Whether a Fourth Amendment claim is somehow nixed if the state were in fact to provide some process for violation of that right.
Well, should we address that question here in answer to this case?
Justice O'Connor, I really think you've addressed it at great length in any number of cases, from Monroe against Pape to more recently, Zinnemann against Birch. And
the state, in this instance, does give your client a civil damages action for the trespass.
That is correct. There's no question about that.
You could have filed that claim. And why didn't you?
I didn't because under Section 1983, the Congress has very clearly, in my view, given me a federal remedy for this type of action. I therefore choose to have this federal remedy.
Do you think that the action of the officers was basically random and unauthorized in the sense the court talked about in Peratt or Williamson County?
In terms of it not being pursuant to an established state procedure, yes, mm-hmm. that is correct. In fact,
so
there is a state procedure.
Perhaps then that's all the process that is due.
If I were bringing a procedural due process claim, that would be true.
But then you're making the law turn just on the technicality of pleading. You create a gaping hole in Peratt because it's just how you allege the violation. And Peratt becomes pretty much a dead letter, doesn't it?
It doesn't at all, Justice Kennedy. And if you look at the cases that have construed Peratt, for instance, if you look at Daniels against Williams, where the prisoner slipped and fell, that clearly would not, which was dismissed on Peratt grounds, that clearly would not be a Fourth Amendment case. There was no seizure that occurred in that case. In the limited number of cases in which a seizure within the Fourth Amendment has occurred, the existence of the possibility of state process has always been held to be irrelevant and should be irrelevant because the Fourth Amendment itself does not concentrate on the process. The Fourth Amendment itself concentrates on the seizure or the search itself. If that seizure or search is termed unreasonable, then there is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. It does not create gaping holes in the Peratt line of cases, which is a very precise holding in those cases, which is that when there is a procedural due process case, if the state gives post-deprivation process, then in several instances, that is all that you are entitled to.
But I take it the procedural violation is necessarily hypothesized on some substantive constitutional violation having occurred.
Well, under a procedural due process claim, you would obviously have to show some deprivation of life, liberty, or property. That is certainly true. But when you're dealing with the much narrower question of a Fourth Amendment violation, which deals only with searches and seizures, and deals only with searches and seizures of a small category of things, persons, houses, papers, and effects. When you are dealing with that, there is no requirement that you first file in state court and find that you have no remedy in state court, or that your federal remedy is diminished by the existence of state remedies. And indeed, it really makes no sense that should be so. The Fourth Amendment itself has no provision which in itself provides for there must be process. The Fourth Amendment looks to a seizure. It doesn't look to process, and it looks to whether that seizure or search is reasonable. And then if you look at Section 1983, through which obviously I'm seeking to vindicate the Fourth Amendment rights of my client, that also has no provision that it is applicable only in the absence of a state remedy. So if you look...
Well, that's what Monroe versus Pape held, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
But then that dealt with a statutory question, basically, not a constitutional one.
Well, Monroe v. Pape was my understanding of Monroe v. Pape was that it was they were alleging a Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment violation.
Yes, and I think the argument on the other side was that since there were state remedies, 1983 wasn't really applicable. And then the court said no, that the existence of state remedies doesn't prevent, as a matter of statutory construction, the application of 1983. You don't have to exhaust.
That is. Correct, Chief Justice. So certainly, with respect to the interpretation of 1983, there is no such provision.
1983 doesn't create any substantive rights, and so there was a Fourth Amendment. Was that the basis there?
Monroe v. Pape, I think, alleged both Fourth and Fourteenth, although I'm not going to swear to that. But
well,
it was,
the Fourth was there.
Yeah,
and
as it is here.
And, of course, if the Fourth... If the Fourth Amendment required first resort to state remedies, there wouldn't be a 1983 action.
Well, for all practical effects, that would be true, because in a vast majority of situations where you have violations of civil rights, that also does amount, in some sense, to a violation of state law. So, yeah, if you had that provision in 1983, that it was only operative if there was no state remedy. First of all, I would expect to find that in the wording of Section 1983, and it just isn't there. And secondly, that would mean that the vast majority of Section 1983 cases would not be, you could not litigate them as Section 1983 cases. But this Court has really consistently held that just is not the provision, as the Chief Justice recognizes.
But the holding in Monroe against Pape was a statutory one. It said 1983, as I recall, 1983 does not require that before you resort to it, you must resort to state remedies that might have given you the same relief.
Okay.
But 1983 did not, rather Monroe against Pape, did not address the contours of the Fourth Amendment.
Yes, I understand the distinction that you're making there. If however, you look at the the Peratt, the Daniels, that line of cases, Zinnemann against Birch, the court has been quite clear that there is, for a Fourth Amendment violation, the existence of possible state remedies is generally irrelevant. And once more, that makes a lot of sense because how can a state statute authorize a violation of the Constitution? How can the existence of a state statute make retrospectively a constitutional violation okay? It can't. The only
in Peratt, in that line of cases, and Hudson against Palmer, tend to cut against that argument, perhaps in a rather limited field.
Well, they cut against that argument in a procedural due process case. There's no question about that. And set forth that in such a case, post-deprivation process may be all the process to which a person is due.
But that just means there's no constitutional violation. There's no violation of procedural due process if due process is provided, whether
that's,
it's before
that's
or
after correct.
The
That's correct. And but this, there's all the difference in the world between that case where you are attacking the process and whether or not you are given process, and this case where you are attacking the seizure itself of a home which comes within the express wording of the Fourth Amendment, which is given heightened protection by the Fourth Amendment. And
are you basing your primary argument on the fact that this was a seizure of property which would qualify as an effect or as of a house? Just property?
No, house. It's house and effect, but I think the...
Oh, I know, but house and effects, they're all property. They're all property. Are you indicating
correct.
There was any invasion of privacy in this case?
Yes, there was an invasion of privacy if you view privacy as broader than secrecy, which this court has historically done.
Well, they got thrown out of their house, didn't they?
That's right, and their lives were disrupted. They couldn't live.
Isn't that a fairly egregious invasion of privacy to get thrown out of your own house?
It always seemed to me, Justice White, that it was. And
you don't need to really rely on just the fact that this was a seizure of a piece of property, do you?
I don't need to rely on that, but I think I have an extremely strong case based upon that also.
Is that your strongest?
I would say they're both extremely strong. But I certainly rely upon the invasion of privacy inherent in disrupting these people's lives, preventing them from living their everyday lives, making them go live somewhere else, deal
and
with...
And what did the Seventh Circuit say about that aspect of the case?
It said there was not an invasion of privacy here, this type of activity did not invade the privacy because it didn't invade my client's secrecy. And there's no question. I'm not saying that anyone looked into the trailer home or did this as part of an investigation. That is not part of my case. I am quite clear that this was an invasion of privacy because it disrupted their life, because it prevented them from pursuing their lawful activities. And certainly this court has previously held.
When somebody stops me from doing a lawful activity, do I say, you're invading my privacy?
In certain situations,
it doesn't mean anything to me. By privacy, you mean the right to be let alone, I suppose. And everything invades the right of privacy.
And this court has analyzed and defined the right of privacy in much narrower terms than that. Notably in the United States against Place, where it held that the detention of baggage for 90 minutes was an invasion of privacy of the defendant in that case. So, no, I'm not saying that any involvement or any disruption of lawful activities is an invasion of privacy. In the fact situation here, however, the prior holdings of this case, and I would submit the history of the Fourth Amendment and the words of the Fourth Amendment would say that there is such an invasion in this situation. That is, it's an extremely grievous
violation. The words of the Fourth Amendment don't say anything about invasion of privacy.
They say search or seizure.
And they also say secure. And they don't say a right not to be arrested, but they say the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. And it is certainly my contention here that the action of the sheriff's police in throwing them out of their house and making them move to a motel for several days, disrupting their life, was a great violation of their right to be secure. In terms of whether or not that disruption, that invasion of their privacy was reasonable or not, that isn't before the court at this time.
It doesn't say secure from everything. It says secure from unreasonable searches and seizures.
That's right? Correct.
And you say this is a seizure, which makes sense to me.
Okay. So my argument, obviously, then, is that I come right down the middle on the Fourth Amendment, that this the language of the Fourth Amendment applies precisely to this type of situation, and that if you look at the history of the Fourth Amendment, what was the history of the Fourth Amendment? It wasn't criminal investigations that gave rise to the Fourth Amendment. To a large extent, it was writs of assistance, and it was revenue officers going out and seizing uncustomed goods, I think notably cider, and taking it away. And as my reply brief points out, those seizures did not occur in the context of an arrest of the person involved. So, in fact, my situation here is very analogous to the history that gave rise to the enactment of the Fourth Amendment. So it's not some extension of the Fourth Amendment that was uncontemplated by history. It's not some extension of the Fourth Amendment that was uncontemplated by the words of the Fourth Amendment. I come right down the middle of the Fourth Amendment, and also it is not an extension in view of this court's prior holdings. And the decision of the Seventh Circuit is a very marked departure from the prior holdings of this court.
Do you agree with the Seventh Circuit's analysis on the takings issue? Was this a taking in your view?
I don't think it was a taking because it and certainly I didn't plead that in the complaint. I think it wasn't a taking.
Your pleading was confined to the Fourth Amendment aspect of the case?
No, my pleading, my original.
You had a conspiracy of property, didn't you?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
You pled a conspiracy to deprive of property, did you know?
Well, not. I don't think in so many words. I pled violations of the Fourth and Fourteenth Amendments, and alleged that it was an unreasonable seizure. I also alleged that it was a violation of substantive due process. I believe the original complaint alleged a violation of procedural due process, but that I did not pursue that claim.
Would a taking in violation of the Takings Clause be a substantive due process violation of the 14th Amendment?
Judge, I really don't. Just as I really don't feel equipped to answer that question. That was not a part of my lawsuit here. It's not a part of my complaint. Not part of the constitutional violation that I pled, that I pursued in front of the Seventh Circuit or in this court. The constitutional violations that I have pursued are primarily a Fourth Amendment seizure, and the. You are correct. The Seventh Circuit did discuss whether it was a takings. It always appeared to me that the problem with that was that it was not a taking by government for its own purpose.
If the government demolishes a house and puts a public school on it without compensating, is that a seizure?
Yeah. Is that a seizure? I think in certain situations that might be a seizure, yes. That certainly could be. But historically that has my understanding has usually been analyzed as a under the Takings Clause.
Yeah, and under the Takings Clause, your remedy is an action for inverse condemnation, usually.
Yeah.
I don't know the remedies in Illinois, but certainly under the federal system. Under your theory, could a person bring a Fourth Amendment action to recover damages for what is basically an inverse condemnation?
If there were what could be construed as a seizure, and if that seizure was unreasonable, yes, I think it could
be. Well, then you really are broadening the Fourth Amendment considerably, because there's a whole class of cases where some agent of the government goes out and purports to take or occupy private property that really he wasn't authorized to do. And those things have been traditionally recompensed by inverse condemnation. If a Fourth Amendment action is available to vindicate that, that's a use of the Fourth Amendment we haven't seen before.
Yeah, well, I think you would need to look at whether the taking itself came within the definition of a seizure, and then look at whether the seizure was unreasonable.
I don't know why you have to proceed in that order. Why can't we ask first whether or not it's a taking, indicating that takings are usually exclusive of seizures, particularly because it's not for a law enforcement or investigative purpose. It's to exercise the rights that an owner generally exercises.
Well, then
to me, is what's happening here.
Well, this is not a taking for a governmental purpose. This shares more of the attributes of a seizure in the course of some kind of law enforcement work by these agencies. Certainly, that's the way they perceived it. But the fact that it was not that is the way that the sheriffs perceived it. The fact that it was not in the course of a criminal law enforcement should not serve to bar the Fourth Amendment from this. And this particular seizure has much more in common with those that type of activity by the governmental agency.
We take this case on the hypothesis that the sheriff stands in the shoes of the trailer park owner.
Correct, Judge.
If this had been a state-run trailer park and the sheriff had wrongfully evicted and removed the trailer pad, wouldn't you say that was a taking?
If it had occurred in this type of context wherein there was a towing away of the trailer, it seems to me that it should be more aptly analyzed as a Fourth Amendment seizure and fits very firmly within that line of cases.
But why? I'm not following you in the sense of understanding what your criterion is. How do you think we should distinguish in a doubtful case between a compensable taking under the Fifth Amendment and a seizure under the Fourth?
Certainly one thing to look at would be whether the taking was for for a governmental purpose, if the government was taking it for their own purpose. That would seem to fit more accurately within the taking line of cases.
When the government takes evidence, it's taking it for its own purpose. Or do you mean its own purpose in the sense of as a property user?
Yes, more the latter. There it is.
Well, what do you do then in this case? The government was not taking it as a property user, and the government wasn't taking it as evidence or as contraband either. I mean, it doesn't fit neatly in any category.
Well, it does fit within the line of cases that say that the non-criminal context of a seizure is irrelevant to whether the Fourth Amendment applies, and also the fact, as this court held in O'Connor against Ortega, the non-investigatory context of the seizure is irrelevant in terms of the application of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I'll grant you that. Which gets you to the point, in effect, of demonstrating that there is nothing in the purpose and the civil nature of this that precludes a Fourth Amendment application. But it doesn't get to the point of saying how do we distinguish between a case appropriately brought under the Fourth Amendment and one that should be brought under the Fifth for compensation.
Yeah, then I am left with the distinction that I drew initially there, that if it was for the government to actually do something with the trailer or in some way convert it into something for their own use, then it would appear that the takings clause would be more appropriate.
Is it fair to say then that you neither pled below nor contend here that there was a taking?
Correct. Yes, that is correct, Justice Kennedy.
Why does it have to fall into one or the other?
Why couldn't it fall into both?
You concede that it cannot fall into both?
No, I don't concede that at all. In fact, it seems to me that there are several cases where this court has analyzed actions under several possible constitutional provisions, and it seems to me it could certainly fall under both. I had pled it and litigated it as a Fourth Amendment claim, in that it appeared to be very precisely within that amendment. Mr. Chief Justice, if I have any time remaining, could I reserve?
Yes, Mr. Stainthorpe.
Thank you.
Mr. Gillis, we'll hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The county officers here do not waive their state action argument. On that, the trial judge found that there was no evidence of conspiracy and dismissed the lawsuit on that basis. However, we move on to the issues that have been
thought there was plenty of state action.
They advanced a number, I think, two or three positions. Yeah. One, they said that they would look at light in the best light favorable to the petitioners here, which I think is the standard.
Well, anyway, they didn't decide the case on the basis that there was not state action.
That's right. They, for and under one theme or another, they went, they assumed there was state action and then went to the issue of whether the Fourth Amendment is implicated by the conduct here, and secondly, whether there was a violation of the Due Process Clause. We believe that the Fourth Amendment, protecting liberty and privacy interests, was not implicated by what occurred here. The
How about its protection of property?
The Fourth Amendment's protection of property?
Yeah.
We do not think the Fourth Amendment protects basic property interests. The Katz decision states that those interests are largely to be left to the states. Here there is an adequate state remedy.
So that seizure basically is a dead letter unless it's accompanied by a privacy violation, on your view?
Yes.
To me, it's one thing to say that, as we have in Katz and later cases, that a violation of privacy constitutes a search and a seizure, or a seizure, even if there isn't any physical violation of property rights. But it's quite another proposition to say that when there is a violation of property rights, there is not a search and seizure. That privacy, in other words, an invasion of privacy, is an essential condition for a violation of the Fourth Amendment. We've never said that before, have we?
I admit that to put any type of ceiling on that conduct would be risky. But on the facts we have here, where there's no prying or snooping, invading or inspecting, we think the Fourth Amendment is not involved. It may be difficult to say in the larger...
The classic English case challenging general warrants, which is what this provision of our Constitution was all about, was a case alleging trespass, a violation of property interests. I don't know how you can say that mere violation of property interests has nothing to do with the Fourth Amendment.
I think it was
whole background.
Trespass to gain information that should be kept private, that persons have a right to keep private. If it were just merely...
Yeah, but that was no part of the old trespass action, was it?
I'm sorry.
That was no... I mean, the intention to gain information was not part of the cause of action in Endick and Carrington, and there's no indication that policy was somehow narrowed when the Fourth Amendment got adopted, was there?
I think you have to look at the objective acts of the police officers or sheriffs. Did they go there with an intent to gain evidence in some broad sense to use against the householder? And I say broad sense, I mean to include the health cases like Camara versus Municipal Court, and C versus Seattle, as well as the more typical law enforcement case. But I think in each instance, the Fourth Amendment is protecting the...
Mr. Gillis, could I give you... We had an argument this morning arising out of a drug seizure in that the law enforcement agency took possession of a home that had been purchased with the proceeds of, allegedly, of drug transactions. Supposing you had a yacht sitting in a harbor that was just bought with the proceeds of crime, and the government wanted to go out and seize it to forfeit and forfeit it. Would you say there was a seizure or not when they go on board and take over the boat?
I think that could be a Fourth Amendment seizure if the government is following through on some interest. The early Fourth Amendment cases substantiate that.
Even though there's no criminal proceeding, just that it's the proceeds of criminal.
I think that the Fourth Amendment should not be limited to the strict...
To evidentiary search.
Right. But it should be viewed more in the sense of a government end or a government mission.
So if this precise seizure we have in this case, to use the colloquial term rather than the constitutional term, had been for the purpose of forfeiting the trailer, you would agree that would have been a seizure?
Yes, or any typical police activity.
So taking the trailer for the government to keep
does constitute a Fourth Amendment violation, but taking the trailer in order to give it back to the, well, they're taking it to get it off of the property.
We think this is like the Cardwell case where the police car was parked on the public lot and the police officers took paint scrapings from it and used those. That was held not to be a search because there was nothing about that that invaded the privacy, no peeking within it, no inspecting it. It's the trailer here was sitting in plain view. It was moved. No officer looked inside it or attempted to introduce anything into evidence in any type of proceeding.
Carry it off either, did they?
No, they was moved temporarily and given back to the petitioners in this case.
How was it moved? It was not moved by mental telepathy or anything. They seized it and moved it, didn't they?
The trailer park people put a hook on it with a tractor, moved it off on its wheels to a nearby lot where it was kept safe.
And isn't the theory of this case, and wasn't the theory of the judgment below, that it was in the possession of the police officers, that they took possession of it and moved it out of there?
If you adopt the theory of the Seventh Circuit, it was temporarily in their possession, but turned over again to the plaintiffs. Unlike
I understand, but it seems to me that's at least a temporary seizure. I mean, if words mean anything, they seized it and moved it.
I think you could, using the common meaning of words, it was a temporary seizure. But what we do not believe it was a Fourth Amendment seizure because it doesn't implicate the purposes of the Fourth Amendment. We also believe that this is not a violation of the cases that this court has handed down on substantive due process. There's nothing about this activity that was fulfilling any Illinois policy, and we think the case cited by petitioners Moore versus the city of East Cleveland is far from the situation here. Illinois had an adequate remedy for this. In its Forcible Detainer and Entry Act, an eviction that goes ahead without a proper court order can be the subject of a damage action. That remedy was always available, as was pointed out earlier. If there are no other questions, we would ask this honorable court to affirm the conviction.
Yes, but in Texas against Brown, Justice Stevens said that the Fourth Amendment protects two interests of the citizen, the interest in retaining possession of property and the interest in maintaining personal privacy. You disagree with that?
I think we do. We would say that it should
have
be.
You have to, I suppose.
Yes. We contend it should be limited to privacy interests and to liberty interests, such as those involved in United States versus Place.
Thank you. Excuse me. I got some.
But Horton against California, that was something said by the court, wasn't it?
Horton against California was the search where the search warrant said rings and they also took guns.
Yeah, well, the court said the right to security in person and property protected by the Fourth Amendment may be invaded in quite different ways by searches and seizures.
Yes, we agree with that. But that the question is whether that involves cases where things are moved and implicating just a property or possessory interest rather than the typical motives behind the Fourth Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Gillis. Mr. Stainthorpe, you have 1 minute remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. The respondents have now acknowledged that this was a seizure which occurred in this case, but have held that it was, but I've argued to Your Honors that it was not a Fourth Amendment seizure. This is a wholly unnecessary gloss to put on the Fourth Amendment, and the type of gloss which has never been placed on the Fourth Amendment before, that some seizures are Fourth Amendment seizures, other seizures are not Fourth Amendment seizures. And it will further complicate a lot of Fourth Amendment litigation if this is allowed, if this kind of differentiation is allowed to continue. Clearly, the seizure in this case did violate the possessory interests that this court has previously held are protected by the Fourth Amendment, and I think equally as clearly violated the privacy interests. Therefore, we would ask that the decision of the Seventh Circuit be overturned, in this case remanded for a trial on whether it was reasonable.
Thank you, Mr. Stainthorpe. The case is submitted.